Greetings to you all. And at the outset, allow me to express appreciation to the organizers and conveners of this historic Malcolm X Memorial Conference for their kind invitation to be on this panel. I also take the opportunity to commend them for this excellent initiative, for materializing an idea whose time has come to honor and remember one of this country's most outstanding leaders, and certainly one of the great revolutionary figures of the 20th century, Malcolm X. I've been told by the conveners that one of the central objectives of this conference is to give Malcolm his rightful place in history and to establish unequivocally Malcolm X's position, his place in the world. I think this is a laudatory objective, and I have no doubt that this conference would go a long way in achieving that goal. The fact that a panel of this nature on this subject is included in the program is indicative of a serious intention on the part of the conveners to internationalize the discussion of Malcolm X, his ideas, his principles, his life, his example. I am one who firmly believes that Malcolm X belonged to all the oppressed and exploited peoples of the world, particularly to the people of color of the world. As a revolutionary from a third world country, third world region, I take pride and honor in claiming Malcolm X as our own. And I hope that I don't run into any difficulties with my African-American brothers and sisters by making such a claim. But I do so out of the firm conviction that Malcolm X was the collective property, you may, for want of a better formulation, the collective property of the toilers of the world. In a sense, he was a contribution, a kind of a gift of Black America to the peoples of color in Africa, Asia, Latin America, the Caribbean, to the communities of color in the so-called North, in the developed capitalist countries, to all victims of racism around the world, to all victims of colonialism and imperialism. Malcolm X was a leader and a hero. And in their eyes, he occupies a place in the pantheon of world revolutionary figures and heroes. The impact and the influence that Malcolm X, his life, his ideas, the principles he stood for and fought for and died for, had a profound influence on a generation of revolutionary figures in the Third World. But the impact and influence was mutual. In the same way that Malcolm's ideas and his life and his example shaped and formed and influenced the ideas and the political practice of revolutionary leaders in the Third World, so too his own development, his own growth, particularly in the last years of his life, were influenced, shaped, and inspired by the ideas and the political practice of his fellow revolutionary leaders. the respect and the admiration that Malcolm held for the leaders that he met in his travels in the Third World, particularly in Africa, was reciprocated by the respect that they held for him. From the Babus of Tanzania, the Nkrumahs of Ghana, Fidel Castro's of Cuba, to the Maurice Bishops of Grenada, this admiration, this respect for Malcolm X, and vice versa, was a very important element in the development of a Third World solidarity movement in the 1960s and 1970s. In an interview in 1964, the year before he died, Malcolm was speaking about his visit to Africa and his meetings with a number of African heads of state. He was asked, "What were the highlights of your trip to Africa?" And his answer was, "I visited Egypt, Arabia, Kuwait, Lebanon, Sudan, Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanganyika, Zanzibar, which is now Tanzania, Nigeria, Ghana, Liberia, Guinea, and Algeria. And during that trip, I had audiences with President Nasser of Egypt, President Nyerere of Tanzania, President Jomo Kenyatta of Kenya, Prime Minister Milton Obote of Uganda, President Azikiwe of Nigeria, President Nkrumah of Ghana, and President Sekou Touré of Guinea. I think the highlights were the audiences I had with those persons because it gave me a chance to sample their thinking. I was impressed by their analysis of the problem, and many of the suggestions they gave went a long way toward broadening my own outlook." And when asked further, How much influence does revolutionary Africa have on the thinking of black people in the United States?" Malcolm answered, "All the influence in the world. You cannot separate the militancy that's displayed on the African continent from the militancy that's displayed right here among American blacks. So you cannot separate the African Revolution from the mood of the black man in America. Neither could the colonization of Africa be separated from the menial position that the black man in this country was satisfied to stay in for so long. And since Africa has gotten its independence through revolution, you'll notice the stepped-up cry against discrimination that has appeared in the black communities in the United States." Malcolm, the revolutionary nationalist, grew, particularly in the latter months of his life, into the revolutionary internationalist. In another interview, Malcolm, describing his ideology, when asked, in fact, "How do you define black nationalism with which you have been identified?" Malcolm said, "I used to define black nationalism as the idea that the black man should control the economy of his community, the politics of his community, and so forth. But when I was in Africa in May, in Ghana, I was speaking with the Algerian ambassador, who is extremely militant, and is a revolutionary in the true sense of the word, and has his credentials as such for having carried out a successful revolution against oppression in his country. And when I told him that my political, social, and economic philosophy was black nationalism, he asked me very frankly, 'Well, where did that leave him?' Because he was white. He was an African, but he was Algerian. And to all appearances, he was a white man. And he said, 'If I define my objective as the victory of black nationalism, where does that leave him? Where does that leave revolutionaries in Morocco, Egypt, Iraq, Mauritania?' So he showed me where I was alienating people who were true revolutionaries dedicated to overturning the system of exploitation that exists on this earth by any means necessary. So I had to do a lot of thinking and reappraising of my definition of black nationalism. Can we sum up the solution to the problems confronting our people as black nationalism? If you notice, I haven't been using the expression for several months." That was Malcolm in an interview in 1964. A few months later, In a speech in Detroit, February 1965, Malcolm said, I quote again, I might point out here that colonialism or imperialism, as the slave system of the West is called, is not something that is just confined to England or France or the United States. The interests of this country are in cahoots with the interests in France and the interests in Britain. It's one huge complex or combine, and it creates what's known not as the American power structure or the French power structure, but an international power structure. This international power structure is used to suppress the masses of dark-skinned people all over the world and exploit them of their natural resources, so that the era in which you and I have been living during the past 10 years most specifically has witnessed the upsurge on the part of the black man in Africa against this international power structure. The newly awakened people all over the world pose a problem for what is known as Western interests, which is imperialism, colonialism, racism, and all these other negative isms or vulturistic isms. End of quote. I cite these quotations to reinforce the point I began to make, that Malcolm had become an international revolutionary, both in his thinking, his outlook, his impact, and his practice. Just like other great revolutionary figures, such as Fidel Castro, Che Guevara, Nelson Mandela, Carlos Fonseca of Nicaragua, Thomas Sankara of Burkina Faso, Maurice Bishop of Grenada, Malcolm traveled the road through hard-fought national liberation struggles to broader internationalist perspectives and revolutionary action. And in doing so, he, like the other revolutionary figures, led millions of working people, of farmers, of oppressed masses in the process of changing and transforming the world. Malcolm always emphasized that looking at all events and all developments in an international context, always emphasized that the struggles of the oppressed peoples of one country or one continent were interconnected intimately with the struggles of oppressed and exploited peoples in other countries and in other continents. And that every advance in one country represented an advance to the struggles in another. Every setback, every defeat represented a defeat for the struggles in other countries. Malcolm rejected the idea that justice for people of color in this country, for oppressed peoples anywhere in the world, can never be advanced by relying on the good-heartedness of the oppressors and the exploiters, or of some common humanity that we shared with them. Malcolm X and the Grenada Revolution. I remember once in an interview with a foreign journalist, Maurice Bishop was asked who were some of the figures that influenced his political thoughts and activities. And the late revolutionary leader of Grenada listed, among others, Marcus Garvey, Franz Fanon, Marx, Lenin, Castro, and Malcolm X. And he added that by reading and absorbing the autobiography of Malcolm X was one of the most profound experiences of his life. Unfortunately, Bishop never met Malcolm personally. But Malcolm's example and his inspiration as an outstanding fighter for human liberation was always present in the consciousness of Maurice Bishop, and always present in the hearts and minds of other Grenadian revolutionary leaders. The anti-imperialist revolution that Bishop led between 1979 and 1983 represented in a real sense the historical continuity and the further enrichment of Malcolm X's legacy and his political trajectory. And just like Malcolm, Bishop was gunned down at the age of 39. But both Malcolm and Bishop lived long enough for black activists, for fighters for national liberation in the United States and the Caribbean, to lay affectionate claim to both of them as their black shining princes. And oppressed peoples around the world proclaim both of them as martyrs for the cause of world revolution. Malcolm X's mother was born in Grenada, was raised in Grenada. Malcolm never visited Grenada, unfortunately. And as you know, Malcolm's father was a devout follower of Marcus Garvey, Jamaican leader who early in this century taught black people here and around the world to be proud of their ancestry and to fight for equal rights, for respect, and for independence. I don't think Malcolm ever visited the Caribbean. I'm not too certain about that, but I don't think he ever visited any of the islands in the Caribbean. But he did have occasion to meet with various leaders from that region. And he often spoke about the common struggle of blacks in the Caribbean and blacks in the United States for self-determination. Shortly before he was assassinated in October of 1979, Maurice Bishop had authorized that the house in which Malcolm X's mother had lived in Grenada in her early years, that that house be turned into a national monument in honor of her son. Not surprisingly, the neo-colonial puppet regimes that were put into place by the U.S. government following the invasion of October 83 saw to it that Bishop's order was never carried out. As I said before, Malcolm X's ideas were given a concrete expression, given a concrete affirmation in the revolutionary practice of the Grenadian vanguard leadership and of the Grenadian masses. And Malcolm's principles and Malcolm's main ideas resonated and were reflected, were carried forward, were further developed during the short 4.5 years of people's power in revolutionary Grenada. Maurice Bishop and the leadership of the Grenada Revolution themselves were products of the black power movement of the in the Caribbean region in the 1960s and 1970s. When Bishop was studying law in England in the 1960s, he had the occasion to hear Malcolm speak in London. He was very much influenced and inspired by Malcolm and by other outstanding figures in the Black Power movement. In fact, an entire generation of radical leadership coming out of the Caribbean were influenced by Malcolm X and by other figures in the Black Power movement such as Stokely Carmichael, George Jackson, etc. People like Walter Rodney in Guyana, Tim Hector of Antigua, and other Caribbean liberation fighters. And those of us who knew and worked closely with Bishop during the revolutionary period and even before the triumph in 79, for us it is difficult to avoid comparisons between Maurice and Malcolm. They both had very similar qualities. Malcolm X and Maurice Bishop were both visionaries. They both had a vision of a new civilization in the United States, in the Caribbean, of a new world order where the principles of social justice and economic equality prevailed, and where the dispossessed, the disenfranchised, the exploited and the oppressed would be empowered to determine, to shape their destiny, their future. Both Bishop and Malcolm were disciplined revolutionaries. They were not only charismatic, great orators, spellbinding speakers who could move masses of people with their words, but in their day-to-day lives, they exemplified what all successful revolutionaries have exemplified: a will of steel and a self-discipline of iron. They were honest, modest, and humble people. Last evening at the opening plenary, we were privileged to hear from the distinguished panel several fascinating anecdotes, vignettes, personal experiences and observations of the man Malcolm X and his qualities. Malcolm was described, I think, by all the speakers. One cannot avoid comparing the love and the respect that they both had for their people and the ability to learn from their people as they carried out the awesome tasks of leadership. They were both scientific thinkers who looked at the world in scientific terms, who understood that history is governed by laws, and that it is the responsibility, the mission of revolutionary leadership to understand those laws and to direct their movements in accordance with those historical laws. Finally, they were both internationalists, in the best sense of the word. And what we attempted to do in Grenada, in the establishment of our revolutionary process, was, one could say, attempt to institutionalize and to give expression in concrete form to the main pillars upon which the entire framework of Malcolm X's ideas rested. For example, on the question of black pride and black self-respect as an absolutely necessary prerequisite for the psychological emancipation of oppressed peoples of African origin, not only in this country, but particularly in the Western world, Both Bishop and Malcolm stressed the importance of this idea. And we were proud to announce to the world that our revolution in our small country, with only 100,000 people, was an anti-imperialist revolution that had embarked upon an anti-capitalist course. Another fundamental tenet of Malcolm's ideas was the right to self-defense, the inalienable right of any oppressed peoples to defend themselves, to defend their dignity by any means necessary, including the use of arms. This principle applied and continues to apply with equal force in countries that have made revolutions as they do in oppressed communities in the United States. Bishop used to always stress that the Grenada Revolution had a right to defend itself. He used to say that any revolution worth its salt has not only the right but the responsibility to defend itself. And a revolution could not call itself revolution if it did not prepare itself and its people for the defense of the homeland against the inevitable aggressions from imperialism.